Hey folks, welcome to the 440 podcast. I am the guest host today, Brian Guthrie. Today, my guest, the real host of this podcast is Jarrell Powell. Jarrell is a talented guitarist, producer, rapper, podcaster extraordinaire. He dabbles in fields such as jazz, rock, blues, hip hop, R&B, progressive rock, lately Afropop from what I heard. Today we're talking about his fourth album, Transitions 2. This album blends all of his favorite genres into a beautiful song experience with collaboration from different people that he's met in the music industry in Los Angeles. It captures a live and organic experience that I personally witnessed and took part in as a bass player. Hi, Jarrell. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. That intro was a mouthful, but
I'm doing my best. I appreciate it. It was lovely. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Please, yeah, I really do. Thank you.
Well, thanks for asking me to host. Thanks for being here. I'm super excited to talk about this. The first thing I want to talk about, well, first, it's a 9-song album you wrote, produced, and played on yourself.
Yeah.
The first thing that I know about you is that you always name your songs first.
Yes.
And then you go into the writing and they become what they become.
Yeah.
So I guess my first question is, you know, what's the main inspiration for Transitions 2? What's the through line for all these songs and why you name them what you name them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as far as to start it off, so when it comes to music, like I always like to think about what I want to make music about before I make it, right? So I try to have a purpose before making something. And for Transitions, I decided to make it into a series because I remember randomly talking to Turner. Just like every now and again, Turner will actually, he helped produce Transitions 1.
Former bass player of Transitions. I have replaced him. Probably because the drive was quicker. No, talented man, but you're talking to Turner.
Yeah, so he texted me and he was like, okay, I went for Transitions 2. And that stuck with me. And I think he meant that as like a joke, like the next project. And I was like, well, why not? And then the first Transitions... The reason behind the scenes of why it was called Transitions, Joe Budden once said, life is a series of moments, right? Life is just a series of memories, moments, experiences, very similar to seasons, right? And you transition from one season to the next. So similar to life, you'll have one chapter where you're having a really difficult time, another one where it's like, this is phenomenal, everything's good. And that's why I named Transitions the first one it was. And this is a whole new transition for me. So, you know, obviously we're nearing the endemic, if you will. And that was a whole transition in itself. And some of the songs are, they're kind of backstory before the music is around that. So that's why I wanted to do another Transitions, called Transitions 2, just have a Transitions series.
So what do you, given that you feel like this is like a new transition in life, like how does that lend to what the tone of the album has become? Like,
yeah.
What does it mean to you, like as a philosophy, as a personal feeling, whatever it is?
Yeah, that's a good question too. And I can probably break it down song by song, but I will say as far as like kind of generalizing that, because I want to answer that, is, you know, I still want it to be true to self for me. So I still want, you know, as far as like my background of like, you know, blues, slight jazz, slight different progressive rock stuff, I still wanted that to be a part of it. But I wanted certain songs to be intentionally, like how they move, intentional. So like Apathy is very much a song that is kind of about 2020, about the pandemic, and about the other things that happened within the pandemic, you know, George Floyd and all that stuff, and about how people react to certain things, things like that, and how there's a degree of separation that, you know, a lot of us realized with other people that we knew or we thought we were friends, right? And the song is written to progress from this droning sense of hopelessness into a sense of hope. So that's why it kind of goes into it starts from that slow drone into this kind of like almost like a happier state, you know. Kind of goes into like a majory type thing in a sense. And the saxophone player Anton Sushev, he really captured that, which I was like really like I was pretty amazed as far as like how he responded to it when he played. But yeah, as far as to answer your question, I hope I'm answering it. As far as to answer it, each song is basically certain experiences or thoughts within the past couple of years. And I wanted to capture it still the same way that I would do it from a musical sense. And kind of press harder too when it comes to like I'm a big, you know me, like I love blues and I love jazz and I love rock, progressive rock and all that stuff. And I still wanted those things to be incumbent in transitions too, but I wanted to press harder on those. I wanted to challenge myself more in those genres. So like the jazz stuff, I wanted to challenge myself more as far as like writing a jazz song, like more traditionally. And I feel like we'll probably talk about the songs more later, but I feel like that's like Mirrors, for example, was like the song I wanted to make in the first transitions, but just didn't. Yeah, just for the sheer, like, not miseducation, but just like experience where I was like, okay, there's too many chords here, you know, like you're doing too much. Like there can be a lot in the song, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to write everything.
Yeah. Oh. For those who don't know, I live off of a busy street.
It's all good.
Motorcycles go by. Also, I can't believe I forgot to say this. I've been wanting to say this like all day. Thanks for tuning up. I can't believe I missed my opportunity to say the catchphrase of this podcast. Anyways, back to what we're talking about. I think I get what you're saying about like the tone, and I think it is like a very appropriate time, especially like. Yeah, we're kind of coming to the end of the pandemic. It's a really reflective time, but you've also been able to sit with yourself and write, you know, probably for the last couple of years. I mean, yeah. How old is the oldest song besides No Roads, of course?
Because you already know No Roads is from 2012. That's probably one of the, besides No Roads, the second half of Apathy is probably maybe a year after that.
Okay.
So, oh, wow. Yeah. So No Roads is probably the oldest song. And then after that, it would be the second half of Apathy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember having that riff for forever, man.
When I remember when we were in the studio, we saved Apathy for last and we just finished recording it. And you had this like look of relief on your face and you said something to the effect of like, man, I've just had that in my head for so long, or like,
yeah,
it feels so good to get it out finally. And I was just like, oh my God, how long have you been sitting on this? But yeah, it was a cool moment because it was the wrap for all of the live musicianship.
Yeah.
But also it was like, it looked like a cathartic moment for you personally.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what it was? I feel like for me, it was like, I'm trying to think of a way where this would make sense. It's almost like, it's like you've had a night, say like you've been meaning to surprise like your loved one with an idea that you had, and you know, you've been thinking about it for years and you're like, you know what, I'm going to do it. And because I kind of, you know what I mean? And then you execute and then like she loves him more than anything, or he loves him more than anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was one of those things where it's like, I feel like with any musician, you know, the main goal and as an artist is just to get whatever's out of your head and to try to translate it the clearest way possible, you know, into a song. Right. And that's kind of what happened with Apathy, and the fact that it happened with people that I like, you that I love, you know, and like, and great musicians, like yourself, to me, that just made it so much more like impactful.
So that gets me to the next thing I want to talk about. Like, tell me about the musicians that you chose. We were working with, Jarrell was on guitar. I played bass. We had Ewan Leslie on drums, phenomenal freaking Scottish drummer.
Shout out to Ewan, yeah.
Anton Sushev was playing saxophone. And then we had Lizzie Izzy.
Lizzie Izzy.
And she added keyboard and also helped a lot engineering as well.
Yeah. 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 She, I don't know if the album would be made if she wasn't there.
she
figured a lot of stuff out.
She was clutch, and we didn't know how clutch she was until we were there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
So tell me about choosing these people and what it was like working with a collaboration. Like, what was your philosophy going in, and how did it come out in the end, you know?
Yeah. So I met everyone at Knockout Studios in Los Angeles. Shout out to Knockhouse. And you introduced me to Knockhouse. And every other Wednesday or whatnot, sometimes they have these little jam sessions or whatnot. So, you know, I was inclined to go. I was like, you know, I have to go this time. I have to go, you know? So I went, and, you know, like, as you know, every now and again, there'll be certain jams and whatnot. And I remember he came in once, like Yuan came in once.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you were on guitar or bass or something. I think you're on guitar. And we were just jamming out to something. And I think he was probably like the fifth drummer that like I jammed with that day. I played so long, like my arms hurt.
Yeah.
The day after.
You can go for hours. Yeah.
I went a while. But when I played with him, I was like, this guy is special. Like, he had the best, like, not only from a technical basis, he was incredibly impressive beyond the others, but he had the best ear. Like, when we went into changes or if we went into a different part, he played as if those changes were there. And I was like, this guy is crazy good.
Yeah.
So I had to be sure to try to keep in contact with him, you know, and I met some other folks as well. Obviously Lizzie Izzy, she was playing keyboard at that time. Anton Sushev, I met later. Of course, I'll get into that a little bit, but I was, you know, and then Turner's still in my brain. So I was like, transitions too, you know? So, yeah. So after that day, it was such a great time. I was just like, you know what? I really want this to, I think I should really kind of try to get this together. You know, so that's when I kind of like group chatted everybody, you know, or reached out to everyone individually. I reached out to everyone individually first, you know, obviously I asked you like, hey, like, can you play bass, you know, and I was so grateful that you were like, yeah, you know, and I reached out to Yuan, you know, Lizzie, and cause first Lizzie was just like, you could like, there's mad other people that played, like, why do you, I was like, no, like, I want to choose you, you know, cause, and my philosophy around it was, When you know this, as far as like, say, like working with Corey, for example, like on De Niro Face, he's the guitarist for De Niro Face, lead guitarist.
That's amazing, my man. Yeah.
Amazing. but there's energy is so important, you know, like your guys' energy is so great. So it's like, for me, I wanted really positive, really great energy working on the project, because I knew that, to me, like that is like the fuel that will drive the project to be made. Mm-hmm. And to be made the right way. You know what I mean? Like, you can have the most technical, amazing musician, but if you guys don't gel well, like, the project isn't going to be what you want it to be.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're going to spend hours with these people, like, ultimately.
Yeah.
And I think what surprised me about the room, I guess I shouldn't say surprised me, because I've met these people as well before, and I just love their energy, love their vibe, but, like, the humility in the room, especially because these jams are huge, you know, you get like 20, 25 people. So it's kind of hard to gauge what a smaller group might feel like.
Yeah.
And then you put, us three or four, depending, sometimes five people in a room, you know, and you start to see what the gel is. And what surprised me about the room that we were playing in Transitions to was just the humility of everybody, and actually probably lent to how efficient we were.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, everyone was just like, no, yeah, no, like, we, like, that wasn't a good take, this is a good take, cool, I'm down to do it again. Like, no one was getting frustrated about multiple takes, no one felt the time pressure that this has to get done real fast. We were just all there to do our best.
Yeah,
at least that's how I felt in the room.
Yeah,
this is great.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that, and I'm glad, Because what I was thinking of, and like you said, yeah, like, and I knew from, you know, from like my responsibility in that scenario is like, look, like, even though if I look stressed, like, I can't, I can't show that and I can't express that. You know what I mean? So like, that's what I was telling you before. I was like, I think you experienced manager drill and musician drill at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because I was like, you know what? Like, I want to make sure this is a positive space. And like, okay, let's just do it again. You know, and for how well we all worked together, like you said, the humility in the room and being it, and just how well we connected together. You know, I was like, okay, I think this can happen. You know, and I think the fact that we did go so well, and then I really just tried to have my emotional intelligence on as far as like, okay, like let's take a break or let's try this again, you know? But I think it just got to the point where everything just started to click.
Yeah. Well, we would start and we'd be like sound checking, and then it turned into a jam, as like you and me, all it always does.
Right.
And like, for me, like I felt like you and I gel really well. You on guitar, me on bass. Like we've just had these really special moments where we just are locked. And then Ewan comes in and there's just something about that kid. Like, I just love that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
But very quickly, like, I felt we all just, three of us locked. And I think bass and drums specifically have to be really, really married to make things sound how you want to sound. And I just felt super comfortable with him like out the gate. And I was like, this is going to be this trio. Because we recorded everything starting with the trio, basically.
Yeah.
Is just going to be powerful, you know? It was really great, really fun.
Yeah. And I think that was another important factor, too, was the fact that, you know, when we're all getting together and when we all start making music, I knew that when we finally were in that room, I didn't want us just to start recording. You know what I mean? Like, it's important for us to... it's important for that jam to happen and for that warm up to happen, you know. That is important, like stretching your legs, if you will, you know. The same way how people, you know, they'll warm up at the basket in like Madison Square Garden before they play their game that night.
Like the bullpen in baseball.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like. And to me, I felt that would be a good indicator too for just how the flow would be,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I remember, for example, the first day where like it was rehearsal day rather. Right. And Anton, I was really grateful that he showed up, that day because I was expecting him to show up on, you know, Saturday or Sunday or whatever it was, but he was like, oh yeah, like I can come to the rehearsals. Oh, cool. You know? And I remember when I was at the computer, you know, and I was just trying to set stuff up because I was like, oh, I want to try to record this. And you guys just started all playing together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I was just like, hey, you know, I sensed how you played with Yuan and, you know, and Anthony, he was just kind of doing his improv thing, you know, with the saxophone, but it sounded like great. And just everyone playing, I was like, I think we have
something. It might work. I just might get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of felt like Doc Brown from Back to the Future, you know. I hit my head in the flux capacitor.
88 miles per hour. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah. So that was a really special moment, just that, you know, that when that happened. But yeah, man, definitely. I was just really blessed to have everyone and everyone to just. To commit, you know, to that, you know what I mean? And being in Los Angeles, it's like, I understand the notion of, you know, hey, like, you know, like this is a passion project that I expressed, you know what I mean? So like the fact of having everyone's time, and time is currency, you know, and I wanted to respect that by making sure I was on time, that I had some for you guys to drink, some you get to snack.
Yeah.
You know,
and thank
then,
you, by the way.
And
thank
then, you. Oh, of course. And then to have that space of just like, let's take a break, let's chill.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then, because I did have my schedule on like each day of what I wanted to complete, and like if we were behind or if we were ahead. And we ended up being ahead, especially with Saturday, because we knocked out like six songs. But like, I wanted to read the room and allow like the chill. And I think that was one of the most like amazing things too, was just being able to chill and we're actually chilling. You know what I mean? It's not like we're in a tense room where everyone is like like, I don't really care for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everyone like got well, like along well with each other.
Yeah.
So,
the pressure was like, we all knew it was there, but we didn't feel the weight of it, if that makes sense, with the time.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should just get into song by song. Like, let's go through this album released today.
Yes. Yeah. If you're listening to it, it should be available now. Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp. If you want to get on Bandcamp, yeah, it'll be available on those.
Perfect. So let's start with first song in the album, In a Trance. And I'm going to probably ask you this every song, but like, why did you, cause your naming philosophy boggles my brain. Like, I think I get it. I think it's great. I sound like a weird SNL character. I love that for you. But like, yeah, I want to know, like, why did you name it In a Trance? What mood were you trying to capture in the song?
So In a Trance, From a song conceptual, there's a couple different footnotes for me, but from a song conceptual basis, definitely, like I said, it was around 2020 vibes, and everyone's locked in their houses, locked in their rooms. They're looking at whoever they live with or whatever. And this is a day and each day thing. First, we're like, okay, how long is this going to be? 30 days. Okay, 60 days. Okay, oh, what? Half of the year's on gone, you know? So it felt like we're just kind of in this trance as far as it's like, right, what is happening, right?
I get you.
So that's where the title comes from. When it comes to the style of the song, it originally is inspired from this band called Go Go Penguin. And they are this UK group. It's an upright bassist. It's a piano player and it's a drummer, but they are so fantastic and they lock in so well. And the piano player is nuts. Like, he's one of those guys. And it's funny, they don't consider themselves a jazz band, even though they play in a lot of jazz venues. But this guy, he'll just have these fantastic arpeggiated melodies, and he'll just repeat it. And it's just like, you hear like the echo of the piano and everything. And then the basses will come in and then the drummer, and it just creates this crazy song. And I wanted to have like this arpeggiated type riff or whatnot. And originally I wanted it to be for piano, cause that's when I sent out the demos and tracks. And originally I did like a MIDI keyboard version of it. And, the other part of the inspiration as far as for Go Go Penguin, well, there's a song called, I think it's called Murmuration. And that's when I first found out about the band, and that song kind of inspired my writing for this song. But then the further on, closer to the recording, I was like, you know what? Let me try to do this different, a little different. I was like, let me just try to do this on guitar. And then like, I got that phaser that I wanted, you know, cause right. I always love, I've always liked the phaser, and I've always liked how the people that I know that have used it, like even like Tom Morelli uses it like a couple times, like out of like the million songs he's made, but when he uses it, it's great. And then just like Tori Moy, sometimes he uses phaser, or the Mattson 2, which is like they're like twin brothers, but they're like this jazz, like acid jazz group. It's like fantastic. I was like, let me try phaser with this. And, I just thought it was really cool, you know. And I think one thing that's important too, just for people to know, when it comes to making these songs, I made them in a very shell basis, but I picked people that I knew had a high level when it came to musicianship. So you're a fantastic guitar player. Arguably almost an even better bass player. Like, I don't know if you know this, like, but you created some lines in this album where I was like, I'm a fucking black bass. What? You know, so.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, and Yuan's fantastic. But I didn't want to cripple anybody with micromanagement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I see that so much with even some of my favorite bands like the Mars Volta. You know, I always refer to Omar Rodriguez Lopez because he's arguably my favorite musician. But a lot of his early days, he was so micromanaging on a lot of the Mars Volta projects, mm-hmm. from Dalal's Crematorium, Amputecture. And then finally he started to open up a bit in some of the later projects before the band broke up. But I wanted to make sure that everyone can incorporate their personality into these songs. And In a Trance, definitely, I wanted to incorporate that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't even really give any instruction to you on it. I think there was like, because, you know, I did make demos and send them out to everybody because I knew that booking that studio time, I was like, I want it to be where we have a really solid idea. We'll do a rehearsal day, but we have a pretty solid idea as far as at least the feel.
Yeah. I mean, I think in receiving those demos, I'm like, okay, I see the foundation, but like you were very encouraging of like, it doesn't need to be like this.
Right.
Like you should definitely take your own spin on it, write your own parts and come prepared and we'll just execute it. Same with you on. And so, yeah, I mean, as a performer on this album, you know, I took every song and I recorded like demos for myself where I took all your bass down in the EQ and then I, and then I just made my own lines, wrote out a little tab and then like left a lot of room to improvise.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of my strategy going in, but it was also like you were very generous in your writing in the sense that you left a lot of open areas knowing that Yuan or myself or Lizzie or Anton were going to come in and fill that space appropriately.
Yeah.
Which I think takes a lot of foresight and a lot of trust that who you chose is going to do the job well, but also bring flair that you will approve of in the end.
Yes. No, I think that's a great, great point. And I think there's never going to be some more stories as far as further on to pretty much rectify that. You're 100% right on that. I think the last note I had for that song was that I wrote solos for this album. The first album, I didn't write any solos. I did, but I didn't. So like I played a solo and then I was like, oh, well, let me remember that. You know what I mean? And then I recorded again or whatever. For this song, I actually wrote solos and it was much less like busy for this album. And one of the musicians that I interviewed for the 440, Jamie Leeming, phenomenal player, guitar player. Mm-hmm. He has his own episode, so whoever's listening, be sure to check that out after this. But he has such a, for a jazz player, I feel like there's so many jazz players that just want to be busy playing. Everyone wants to imitate saxophone, which, you know, that's cool, you know, but I think as far as from a personality's trait, you know, what else you got? And Jamie Leeming, he has such an amazing way of phrasing. His note phrasing is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he has an amazing solo on this song called Naidi on Alphamous album, Structuralism. And that really inspired me to play the solo how I played it for In a Trance.
Interesting. Can I make a guess at you about some of your playing?
Yeah. Okay.
So for the listeners, my friend Jarrell here played in a Halloween cover band project called Skelefuzz.
Yes.
And I believe what was the Carlos Santana song? Was it Black Magic Woman?
Yeah.
So you did the solo on Black Magic Woman. In my opinion, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like your solo playing after you like took the time and peeled that solo apart and learned it well, I feel like your playing has gotten a lot more like Spanish in some of your solos. And
really?
In a Trance is like one of those where I'm like, I feel the Spanish flair. I don't know if that's the Santana rubbing off or if you got these other influences I don't know about.
Maybe. I mean, I did listen to Santana a lot growing up. You know, I mean, that Abraxas album is a classic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then like, I remember Long Kiss Goodnight, they covered the Zombie, She's Not There. On that, when Gina Davis is like pretty much transitioning into an assassin before
that,
Very Eyes.
That movie is so good.
It's classic, right? But I remember they played that song, She's Not There, and the Carlos Santana song. I'm like, this is fucking amazing. I think that was even before I started to play guitar, but that always stuck in my brain. And I've even heard after, even this last Skelefuzz that we had last year, there was a guy watching and he was like, I love your playing. It reminds me of Santana. And I was like, oh, Thanks. So there's something there. I think
it's subconscious. It's
that,
at least
it's that Dorian dude. That Dorian mode. It's getting me. But yeah, I think you have a point. I would say I wasn't thinking of him writing that solo, but it's interesting as far as how that flair comes up. And I think there is a Spanish notion. I really, as far as for Santana's phrasing, that did like encapsulate, I think, a lot of my playing now.
Yeah.
What are you going
to
do?
All right. I'll take it. I'll take the answer. I'll take it. So let's go on to second song on the album, Mirrors. This is one of my favorites for sure. The most notable thing about this song to me is the shift from the intro to this like swinging groove.
Yeah.
And then everybody gets a solo. Like this, like as a player on this, so fun. Just because like everyone gets to shine, but we're also like, it has this big transition at the beginning and then it goes into this, to like a reprise of it at the end. Where did that come from? Like,
man, you see, so yeah, this is the song, just to kind of repeat the notion, this is the song I wanted to make on the first album. So the first, the song that I made on the first album that just kind of like organically became something completely different with Sunsets. So I originally was writing Sunsets as a jazz type song, but it didn't work because the structure of the song was not very jazz, where it's like you have the head, which is the main melody. You have the body where everyone's taking a solo. You have the head again, and that's it. ABBA. That's it. You know what I mean? So I didn't have that idea of writing Sunsets, but for this, I very consciously wanted to make my approach towards jazz. I won't say I'm a jazz guitarist because I know there's a lot of weight to that. I'm a jazz enthusiast and I wanted to make something to just show my appreciation for the art.
Yeah.
So like Olio, which I believe is a Sonny Rollins jazz standard, has very much that same type of idea. And I wanted to do something similar like that. So like I wrote that part, you know, and also like kind of like an ode to Pat Martino as well. But so I just thought like that'd be so cool just to do that. And then also for my guitar playing for this part, for me starting, I was very much trying to encompass Grant Green.
That's right.
I remember we've talked about
Grant Green.
We've talked about previously like different jazz players and like, you know, who are favorites, you know, and why and whatnot. And I love having this conversation with you, by the way.
Well, thank you.
But I've always loved Grant Green just because I feel like I connect with, there's something about him that I feel like I connect with as far as stylistically. I love how he does solos. And just as far as one thing about that I try to do too is listen to his solos a lot as far as pacing, pacing, space between notes, you know what I mean? And really swinging, you know? And I knew, like, I didn't have a doubt that Yuan wouldn't be able to do that. I knew he would. So I was like, okay, I need to really lean in. And then also hearing your bass part too, you know? So my solo part is very much like highly inspired by Grant Green.
What I love about this song, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the intention behind it was like probably calmer than what it actually became. In that, like, it was supposed to be this swinging kind of bop, kind of like sweet, like song. And then you put us in this fucking room and like you give us this intro that's like on fire by itself. And then like we just took off and the whole thing, like, it is a slower song, but the whole thing's like on fire.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is something about your playing, especially in your solo, that has like this off, kind of like offbeat, but like I'm pacing, I'm taking my time. I'm just like throwing a little water in your face. Yeah. Like kind of like, but like, yeah, very much about your phrasing, which I can see. I feel like you and Grant Green are probably like not
related in some way.
No, I mean, I think you just like, your souls are connected in a way, in a weird way. Cause like I see not necessarily just in the playing, but just in the way he holds himself. Like I can see some similarities in like his attitude at least.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. And one thing too, that I found interesting as far as just like, you know, really, cause I was really trying to do my homework for this song, just realizing how much, like, I feel like every guitar player, it's like trying to get out of the pentatonic. Like, I feel like the pentatonic box is like Riker's Island. Like, everyone's trying to get out of the box, right?
It's a curse.
But it's so much, it's all to, I realized later on, it's not like, it's just about how you use it and then how you can manipulate it. Cause it's in jazz. It's in a lot of jazz.
It's the bones.
And Grant uses it a lot. You know what I mean? Like he'll play more traditionally through chords, through changes. But I was like, you know, I see, it's funny. I was watching a video. I won't say the guy's name, but he was trying to show an example of, oh, you can play pentatonic and play jazz. And I feel like he just did a really bad example because he was bending. And I'm like, jazz players don't bend strings when they play jazz. At least traditionally they don't. So I was doing more sliding. I was intentionally sliding instead of bending notes.
Right.
Cause then it doesn't turn into jazz. It turns into something else. And I wanted to at least have some type of focus jazz wise. So that's why I was kind of doing like the blue note thing and then doing sliding and whatnot. And then, yeah. And I love your fucking bass solo nuts, dude.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't know what I was doing. I think what's fun about recording this as a trio is like, you're doing a lot of comping on the album.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like most jazz, your guitar player, jazz player, you're comping most of the time. You're supporting rhythmically and you're giving room for the melody to take place.
Right.
So like you just gave me all this room to make melody. And yeah. So my job was to hold the line, make sure that everything's on beat, but like also gave me all this room to play melody. And then once all that's set, like you give me a solo, I have so much groundwork done already. The fun thing about this solo to me was the moment that you and I had with Yuan when he got his solo.
Yeah.
Cause like he's going crazy. He's doing all these like off kilter, off beat stuff. And I remember just being like, I just got to keep the count in my head and we'll back. And we all just had to trust that we were all there together. And we were. And so like, it was a really great moment.
It was funny. Cause that wasn't initially written. And then I remember I was like, you want a solo?
I wasn't written a solo. Yuan wasn't written a solo, and you're just like handing them out like Christmas toys. You're like, yeah, you know.
We'll he was like, oh yeah, you know, and I remember talking to him previously, like before recording, and he was just like, oh yeah, like I'm really trying to study the rhythms, you know, and everything and all this stuff. And I was like, okay. And then when he did the solo, like I was like, yeah, this guy's special.
He's the real deal.
He's one of those players, and it's lovely when you see this. And I, you know, I've seen this many a times from like watching a guitar player at NAMM, where you're like, yeah, this guy's something. And with Yuan, it's like I think when you play, people just gaze. You know what I mean? Like there's just certain special players. Like in with what's his name? Calvin? James Calvin?
His
name?
Oh yeah, the piano player.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those players where you just gaze when he plays and you're like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just keep going. Let's go to Traveler. This one is featuring, I didn't mention her earlier, but Grace Kinter.
Yes.
Wonderful singer.
Wonderful.
I think it's so interesting, again, that you name these songs and then you pass them off, especially to vocalists, and go, it's called Traveler. I'll see you in 3 weeks. And you're like, and it's like, okay, like, what do we, you know? Did you give her any direction?
Nope.
How? Not at all.
Nope.
Okay. So how do you feel like? What was your intention with that name?
Yeah.
And how do you think she captured it, or she went in a different direction than all her own?
Yeah. Well, I will say, if there's any conversation we had when it came to lyrics, I was like, oh, like, let me know if you need help with lyrics. It's like, I have a couple ideas. And she's like, oh, like I'm used to just writing my lyrics. I said, great. I said, my plan was more of a contingency plan. So go for it.
I didn't even mean it. So
yeah, I was just fucking with you. No, but yeah, she's phenomenal and incredibly professional and a great vocalist. But yeah, as far as for the my conceptual idea around the song, it's funny how the rubber met the road on like both of our ideas and how, like, let's go. I like her interpretation. My interpretation originally was about someone who, it was basically about a musician traveling, like, to find his artistic purpose, but like is kind of like neglecting what's in front of him at home. So like, selling musician, like touring,
on the road. Yeah.
Yeah. Like touring, but like the baby and the wife are at home, you know, like that was kind of like,
but the cocaine's in the dash.
Yeah. That was kind of like, it was kind of like that sad notion. So, but how she wrote it as far as like someone traveling with her being by her side, I was like, that is like the opposite, but it makes total sense. And I like that more.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I love her spin on it. You know, I loved her lyrics on it. And it was funny too, cause I remember when I was, you know, working with her, I had like the book of the, this is one thing too, I definitely want to mention as far as the album, like trying to write the music on that stupid music notation thing. Cause I don't have, Sibelius. I don't have it. You know, which is like the main go-to software to write music for instrument players and whatnot, or just piano or anything, yeah, as far as traditional music notation. And I had a bunch of folders and I gave one to her and she was like, no one's given me a folder before, she said. She's like, you're so organized. I love it. I was like, oh, thanks.
I haven't seen one of these since grade school.
I was like, you know, I was like, I feel like I'm falling down the stairs, like mentally, but thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was just like, oh, like, I love how you named it. And like, I had to like interpolate around it. So she, yeah. I was like, I'm glad you liked it because you did great. You
know? Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of the notion around that. And then like, I wanted to, just from like a music sense, I wanted to play new chords. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of the times, sometimes where we feel complacent or we just don't want to learn anything new, we just got to play the same chords. And like, I feel like I was playing the same chords and I was like, I want to learn new chords. So like, I went on a journey like on the internet finding new chords. And I came across this, this gospel guy who was talking about just these different chords. And I was just like, that's cool. So I took that and I just ran with it, writing songs, you know, and I'm like, I like this and this, like, I like this, you know, like, and whether or not I knew what the actual key of the songs were, eventually I did afterwards when I was writing it. But, I was like, I like this. And that's kind of like part of the journey as far as working on the album from a music standpoint. But yeah, Traveler is so dope. I'm so glad how it worked out. It just, yeah, everybody locked in.
Yes.
You know, everyone watching, I love your bass part. It's great. You know, complimented the drums and stuff really well. And like you said, like I did do a lot of supporting notion, and I feel like that was kind of like from a symbolistic nature, like that's kind of what I wanted to do, you know. I feel like with the first album, I was very much in front for a lot of like the solos and stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't take it back. You know, like I loved everything that I did there. Obviously with, you know, for Julie, I need to be in front. But for this one, I just feel like I needed to support everyone doing what they're doing. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm just kind of like supporting that. And yeah, Traveler, I feel like was one of those.
Nice. Yeah. Let's go on to fourth song on the album, Right By Me. Now, cool. I feel like probably one of the more simple bass parts I got to play, but yeah, it was one that I wanted to sit in the longest.
Oh, wow.
If that's what makes sense. Me and Ewan, after actually, when you left the room and we finished recording that song, we just looked at each other and I was just like, man, I could have done that for another 20 minutes.
Wow.
Just like it zoned us out into a zen state, I guess.
Yeah.
And I just love sitting in it. So why did you call it Right By Me? What does it mean to you?
I guess this is another one where like I want it a very, very, it's very much from the same book as far as like jazz type standard. I wanted to do something similar to not similar, but just inspiring of like All of Me, the jazz standard, where it's just like a very like, just like, oh, like this is like the jazz standard thing. But like, I kind of wanted to be something around that. And that was kind of the inspiration around Right By Me. But I feel like it became something much more in a positive light. You know what I mean? Cause like, I remember making the demo and I was like, this one seems rough. Should I cut it out? I'll keep it. And then I ended up using it and I was like, oh man, I'm so glad I didn't cut it.
Yeah. No, it came together nicely. Yeah. It came together nicely. That was, I love what it became, because it feels super sympathetic. It feels like, feels like it means something, like on a personal note. It's just nice to listen to.
I'm glad. I'm really glad. I was like, man, I hope this isn't too slow. But like, I remember talking to, because I think Yuan was, he was kind of mentioning as far as like, oh, like, how's this sound? I was like, oh, it's kind of like this. And he was like, okay. So like, he's like, and then he mentioned like some type of a groove thing. And I was like, yes, do that. You know, like, I was like, yes, do that. And it was so funny. I feel like we were, I mentioned this album a lot, but I feel like it's relevant and it's connected to this. But you know, the album Money Jungle with Duke Ellington, Max Roach, and Charles Mingus. I feel like that was like, this is like my money jungle.
All right.
Where just like you're killing it on bass. The drummer's freaking insane. Yeah. You know, and I'm just kind of supporting everyone. Like, I feel like we just had so many money jungle moments where we're just like, this is fucking dope. Like, you know, just really in sync.
Yeah. Just locked. I mean, there was like shockingly little direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in a negative way, like at all, of course, but like, it's just like, you gave us the room, you trusted us, and everyone in there supported each other. It was just a very giving environment.
Yeah.
So that like we were able to create well. You know?
Yeah.
I can't emphasize that enough. It was just such a fun room. Cause I would like get in and I'd be like, okay, I wrote my bass part. And I think, I don't know how Ewan prepared at all. I would actually love to know.
Yeah.
But like he just kind of came in, he listened to my bass, he listened to your guitar. And then I think he listened to the demo a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he was like, fuck that. did his own thing.
Yeah.
In the same vein and in the same respectful way. But like, he just like made something completely new and had fun like a kid.
Yeah. I knew, you know what strikes me? I'm so impressed by him too, which just kind of compliments his musicianship is, like, he has a lot of moments when we're transitioning where he does this build up. He does this build up rhythmically, you know what I mean? To go into another section. And, you know, when he was talking to me about rhythms and stuff, and I remember even just talking to him, like, when we were taking a break or whatever, just mentioning different drummers and stuff. And like, oh, yeah, this guy's a jazz great. And I was like, fuck, I need to know who this guy is. He's like, I don't even know who he's referring to, but I was like, that's awesome. And you hear the homework he's doing and you hear just that type of homework that he did for the project, you know, and then it's kind of incorporating whatever else he's doing. Cause I remember he was, he had an Instagram story in a band that he's in, Star Maker. And he has a caption he wrote and he said, I told my band, I said, everything in this drum kit gets used. And I thought that was amazing because I've never really heard that before. Like, it's like not just tom, no, the edge of the tom, the edge of the snare, edge of this, the edge of the hi-hat. Like, he really understands texture beyond that I haven't really seen from a drummer in quite some time.
Yeah. The way he tuned him too. Like, I remember you probably sat on the drum set for a second after he tuned it and you're like, wow, that's what it's supposed to be like.
Right. It's like, oh my God. As a guitar player, I'm just like, oh, that makes perfect sense. You know? Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about probably my favorite song on the album.
Really?
I think so. Together.
Ooh.
This, I think, was probably the hardest song to record. Am I going over time here?
No, you're perfect. Okay. Don't worry about that.
I think this was the hardest song to record because I remember I think I said in the studios, like, we have to get it right because it's called Together and we have to play it together. because like that's the only way it would have worked is if we were all really on the same page.
Yeah.
And I think that was the only song I stood up for. I was like, give me another take. but yeah, I think it's just one of my favorite songs on the album. It's just my favorite energy. What was your goal in writing that song and how did it become what it became?
Firstly, I want to say I love your support on that song as far as like, you're like, this is so fun to play. And like, cause I remember playing it, that riff recording, and I was like, I think this would be pretty dope, you know, but nowhere near to the magic that it created. And I just remember you saying, I think you're the only one who commented on this song, like before we even got into the studio. Just like, oh, this song is so fun. And I was just like, really? So that gave me hope as far as like what it could be writing it, right? As far as the story behind Together is a very much like, it's very simple, but then it's also like nice at the same time. Just as far as like, you know, hearing so many stories where like couples are going like not, you know, going at each other's heads and stuff during quarantine and all that stuff. And I remember reading the statistics saying like the divorce rate, the divorce rate skyrocketed, you know, like after the pandemic, and a lot of people had a lot of trials and tribulations, and just like, and a lot of people were making jokes as far as like, if you can stay together through that, you can stay together through anything. Right. You know what I mean? So like, I reflected on like my marriage with my lovely wife, Julie, you know, and you know, stay together and, you know, we didn't go crazy. We didn't murder each other. And that's kind of like that's kind of like a little bit of the story behind it. But I also wanted it to be this funky, cool thing because, you know, like we love music. Julie love music. We love Amoeba. We had our engagement photos in Amoeba. You know what I mean? But the old Amoeba location before they closed it, right?
Rest in peace, that one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, like, and I wanted it to be this funk lock-in thing. And man, it just worked so well. I loved like our energy was so good.
It was, I mean, like I wanted to just keep playing it. Like it's just one of those songs for me. I think just in general, my biggest bass influence is probably the Fifth Dimension, Let the Sun Shine In.
Mm.
Let the sun shine in. Oh, wow. If you just like focus in on that bass, that's like everything I wish I was. like biggest influence or song influence for me is like that. And like, I feel like what I loved about this song is it gives me that opportunity to like really be funky, be fast, and like do like offbeat stuff and like riff and really just explore the fretboard in a way that like it's just fun from beginning to end for me. So that's why I just thought the song is so fun, but then because I think we're all having fun, the energy is captured in that room. That's like, just,
you really shine on that song. Like me listening to it. Cause I mixed like 60% of the songs or whatever on the project, but I remember mixing this one. You really shine on the song. Like, there's a lot of fill turnarounds you do that are really neat. And then when I go into the solo, I was like,
oh yeah,
dude, I
forgot that I did that.
I was like, this is why I chose this man.
Yeah.
Because there's just different things that click, you know, like, I was like, this is really special.
I felt like, so as like a guitar player, like I'm so like, you can get into that mindset of like, okay, I'm just going to cut loose. And like you try to have those moments where you can really do it. But with bass, it's like, no, I've got to hold everything down too. Like I can't. Like cutting loose is like a different definition.
Right.
But for this song, I feel like you really let me off the leash and like, but I also gave me the song is just such a framework to be able to still hold it down too, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, no, absolutely. No. Cause you're like Yuan's like following you, you're following me. And then you're still adding your things around that. You know, and that's what amazes me about bass in general, as far as just like how complex it can be and how simple, but how complex it can be at the same time. And again, like your character really breathed breath through that. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, absolutely. That song is so fun.
Yeah. Such a fun song. Yeah. Let's talk about Slow Burn. Also another song featuring Grace Kinter.
Yes.
What did she say when she said, I got to write a song called Slow Burn? Like,
she's like, what? no, she didn't say much about, I remember asking her to do this song too. And she was like, oh, cool. You know, she's so great, man. Like, as far as like, she's such a professional as far as just like how she creates. I just respect it very highly. Like she's like, cool, got it. And it's like, she has an idea or she goes into something, she executes. And then she's just like, oh yeah, I got something written or whatever. And I was just like, wow. Like, I remember when she said she was like traveling somewhere and she's like, oh, like, yeah, this inspired me to write this. Like I wrote during travel, like as I was traveling from XYZ to place. And I remember, she sent me this video of her practice of her roommate listening at her door and hearing her practice.
Oh, you really?
She was like, roommate caught me practicing a slow burn. You know, she's doing these riffs and stuff, but the roommate's just like, okay. You know, but she's so, yeah, she really executed the song and she really made it her song, which mm-hmm. I loved. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, obviously, listen to the lyrics, like, it's a very much, she felt it was a very, again, the creativity or the ability to create how she wanted to create it. And I didn't want to slow that down for anything, you know, the same way how I, you know, I wanted to create that, just the shell. And then you guys, you know, put your yeah. personalities into it. She absolutely did that for Slow Burn. And that, I remember that chord progression I was toying with before one of the jam sessions back in the day at Knockhouse.
Like, oh yeah.
You yeah. know, and I remember, remember Enrique, shout out to Enrique, amazing bass player. He was like, that's a cool chord progression.
Yeah, I remember that. I
was like,
yeah. Thanks.
So like, I like put it in like my brain bank and like saved it, you know? So I was like, I'm going to use this for Slow Burn. So yeah. So,
yeah.
So Enrique, I know you were saying make a song. I made the song.
Yeah. All for you, baby.
All for you.
No, I feel like her lyrics, you sense, when you just break it down, you feel like you can sense a lot of meaning
yeah.
in it. But I also, because what I get from the song is it's about a love that it doesn't have to burn hot and fast. It should burn slow because you're in this for a long time, which made me think about your relationship with Julie. I'm like, yeah, like this very much feels like a song that would get Jarrell's approval because it, to an extent, it could probably speak to his personal relationship, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I feel like it speaks a lot to, I mean, and correct us if we're wrong, Grace, because we're two guys trying to figure this out. But from my male brain, I thought of it very much as like a woman independent song too.
Oh,
you know, where it's just like, I don't need another light source. You know, like, I'm going to love myself first, and no one needs to do that for me.
I'm getting completely different interpretation. I need to re-listen because I am now unsure.
But going back to what you said, though, that reminds me of Julie as well. She's a very independent, you know, woman, and she stands up for you know, for women and you know, and anything that she does, you know, like she's had a lot of really shitty bosses in her past time, and a lot of sexist, misogynist people that she's had to deal with, and she stood up for a lot of people who couldn't stand up for themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's one of the things I love about her, you know. So I felt like when it came to Slow Burn, as far as some of those lyrics that were written by Grace, I was like, oh, this this definitely connects to like Julie in a sense, as far as like how she'll think through certain things.
Right.
You know, so I was like, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I really like that song. I really like playing that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just keep going.
Let's do it.
The Healing.
Yeah.
Okay. This one I felt was also just like one of those surprisingly like turned out to be way more fun.
Yeah.
Than we were expecting.
Yeah.
Tell me about The Healing, like, and how it became what it became.
Yeah. So The Healing, the title of the song, is basically connected to after pandemic, and we're all just kind of like healing from this crazy situation that happened and becoming a better people, essentially. And I kind of created this like Sade-ish song, like, you know, that I didn't even know. And I remember too, the saxophone player, Anton Sushev. Shout out to you, Anton. You did an amazing job.
Yeah.
And I remember literally like he was like about to record. He's like, what do you want me to do for the song? And this is basically his song, basically. Because I was like, I looked at him. I said, think Sade. And he was like, got it. And I think his brain probably said, whatever. But you know, because like, you know, we play, because I remember one of the things that I laughed about was that, like, I remember him coming on Thursday, and I mentioned him. I said, yeah, all the songs will be recorded and they'll be like pre-mixed, you know, so you can play over them. He's like, all right.
Like, he's very stoic.
He's, yeah, Anton. He's great. Yeah, he's great. He's
so you're like, I hope he likes this. you know, when he comes through.
Yeah. You know, so he's like, all right, you know, because the guy's a professional. So he comes back, you know, he's like, oh, the song's made. I said, yeah. I was like, all right, cool. So he listened to him. And I knew, like, I knew there was some type of connection if I know he can play through it. You know what I mean? And yeah, he did such a great fucking job on The Healing, man. He did such a great job. And he created a melody. He did things all around it. I mean, he really exemplified his, he just showed his ability, you know, like as an amazing saxophone player, you know. And then I even wanted to do some stuff on Mirror. You know, I was like, you know what? We got four bars. Let's throw waves out of there. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I had him do something for the end for everyone to play that riff. But yeah, it was just like, I got to add him in there too. Just so it was like, these are the players for the project. But yeah, he's a phenomenal job. Like, he literally made a song. Like, and we think we did two takes.
Because
I was with Lizzie. And she really, like, I don't know if Lizzie wants to be a producer as well, but she's kind of like my right hand person as a producer person. Cause she was like, oh yeah, let's do one more take. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and she was like, She had her producer brain on.
And she meant it.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, like, she's, you know, she not only figured out the technical basis of like the signal chain and everything, but she's doing their producer stuff too. So I was like, go, Lizzie. I think we work really well together. But yeah, she, you know, she worked with Anton and stuff really well. And yeah, I think it was like two takes or something, and Anton killed it.
That's awesome.
Killed it. So yeah, I hope you liked working on the songs and stuff, and because you did a great job. Like, you really showed professionalism. So definitely, like, anyone needing a saxophone player for a gig, like please contact that man. Like, he'll do a great freaking job.
Anton Sushev.
Yeah.
Great man. This song, it's like one of those where guitar wise, I feel like you're more in the background than the others. Mm. So it's this song that really comes together kind of more so with all these other instruments. Like you said, it's a sax song in the end. Like, that's really the shining light. How do you go about writing something where you're going to take a big back seat?
I knew for The Healing, I knew that I created a melody through the chords I played. Right. And I wanted that to be sound. So I wanted to make sure that you and Yuan, like, listen to each other on your parts, to kind of driving the song. And then for my guitar part for The Healing, it's funny. I remember mentioning to you before, I was like, have you seen that movie Arthur? It's like, I think it's like a,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. The old school. It's like an 80s film. And it's about like this rich drunk. And he has this butler who's pretty much telling him like, you need to stop drinking. Like, you're going to kill yourself. But there's like this love song in that song that I always remembered. And I think the timbre just kind of like inspired me to kind of write the chord progression that I was writing. And then, when I started writing, I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of like this damsel in distress in like London, and like just kind of like just this mischievousness as far as just like the tone per se. But yeah, I just wanted, I feel like my, as far as for one of the challenges for me, like as a musician, or just what I wanted to explore as far as like create the groove, create the pocket, you know what I mean? I remember talking to Charlie Burrell on his episode on the 440, as far as like having that, like being able to create that pocket, like that's like everything, you know what I mean? Mm. So I really tried to explore that for The Healing. And even like, if you hear Anton solo, saxophone solo, you hear him complimenting the things that I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and then when I go to the main like a chorus thing, it was da-na-da-na-da-na, like he's playing through the notes of through my chords for that melody, you know? So I think that support is just, that's really the building block, you know, for the song. And that's really what I wanted to do, just because I have so many players. Like I said, like you want those people to shine, and you want that creativity to come in. So it's like, I can't be the forefront of this, because it's like I don't want this to be the Jarrell show, you know. Like, I want this to be a project that, yes, I arranged, right? Like I'm like the architect per se, but I don't want to be building everything. Like that's not fun, you know? Mm-hmm. So
it's like a potluck.
Yeah.
You're just hosting.
Yeah. I'm going to eat eventually.
I'll get my play last.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly.
I'm hosting. Okay, we're almost through the album, but we can't stop without talking about No Roads Reprise.
Ah,
No Roads yes. originally showed up on your first project, which the title was
Life on a Canvas.
Life on a Canvas. My mistake.
Yeah, no worries.
And I remember you told me that your brother loves this song.
That is his favorite song that I've ever made.
Ever made?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So is that really why you wanted to reprise it or?
Partially, yeah. Partially, yes. I kind of wanted to surprise him with it as far as like, hey, check this out. You know, he'll probably say, this is good. I still like the other one.
Brothers, man. Brothers.
I tell ya. But another thing too, it's one of the hardest songs I've written. Like I thought it was in 4/4. It's not in 4/4. You know, like as far as just from a technical basis, it's the hardest song I wrote. But I really liked how it turned out, and it just created it's weird because it came from a place of pain too. Like, I mean, I remember being really depressed at that time in 2020 when everyone, like, I think you were in Arizona.
It was probably 2020. Well,
yeah. I think you were in college. Andrew was in Cal State Long Beach. I was still in Yucaipa, and just like I felt like I was stuck, right?
Yeah.
And I remember making that song, and it came from a place of pain a little bit. But I just remember I was happy with just how the song came about. But like I felt like there are certain limitations musically and technically that I couldn't get the song there. And I remembered that. And I was like, what if I brought No Roads here? Because I think I saw this beauty of these wonderful musicians getting together and playing. And I said, well, it still makes sense for the album from a conceptual nature, you know, especially, you know, as far as like the tone of the album and everything. And I got these great players that are able to work off of these, you know, structures. So I was like, what if I did a No Roads Reprise? And I'm really happy with it because I feel like it creates, I feel like it's almost like a slightly tamer version of it, but a more complicated version at the same time. A lot of it is an ode to you and Yuan's texture and rhythmic, you know, nature of it. But yeah, I wanted to bring it back. I wanted to bring it back because it meant something then as far as we're kind of being stuck. And then I just wanted to really let it shine the right way from a technical basis, you know, because I remember, I think someone else, I won't say the name, but someone else played the bass part. And I remember when they played the chorus, I said, I like that. I don't know about anything else, but I like that.
Yeah.
And that stayed with me. And I feel like there's a lot of trust in that part too, because I was playing this completely different riff, and I was like the three, like I just need you to play these three notes, and you can play around it, but this is what's really driving the song. And then when I listened back after the recording, I was like, yes, I was like, yeah,
that was one of those few directions that you were like, I really need you to do this. Don't get too crazy. But then on like the more off 5/4 part,
yeah,
I just kind of did something like random that I wrote.
Yeah.
But I feel like I was scared a little bit that I changed the tone of the song too much. But like, how do you feel like it evolved and are you happy with the end product?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I am. I feel like it's like an updated version, but like a smoother version at the same time.
Okay.
You know, because I feel like No Roads, one of the things that kind of works and then it kind of works against it is like the rough on the edges part of it. Because there's different parts in No Roads that I didn't add for the reprise because I was just like, this doesn't really make any sense to add that. I just liked the main pieces of No Roads, but I wanted you guys to like, okay, what do you think about these? You know,
what are you gonna do with it?
Yeah,
run, boys, run.
Yeah, so I loved what you did. I thought what you did was great. And you know, like I said, like with those, because yeah, like I said, like everything else, I was like, oh, like you know, like. Yeah, just do what you do. But I was like, for this song, because it's so crazy, I was like, yeah, just be sure to play these things. And when it goes into those changes, I was like, this is really awesome. So
let's talk about Apathy. Yeah. Last song on the album. We talked about it a little bit beforehand about what it means. Why did you choose this last, I guess, is my question. Like, how does this button up the album for you?
Yeah, so... It's funny. I have I co-host a music review podcast called The Music Buds. Shout out to y'all. Check it out. Buds with B-U-D-D-S. His last name is Bud, Preston Bud, who he's the mastermind behind it. But album sequencing is something that I've really paid attention to, right? And for this album, for Transitions 2, I wanted everything to be the last song because it was kind of what stuck in my brain from those 2 years. Like that was one of the biggest things, was showing how apathetic people were. And I didn't even know it. You know, there's people that I knew that weren't necessarily my friends, but just showing how apathetic they were. And I was like, okay, you don't need to be a part of my life. Snip. And, you know, and just how that it just separates society. You know what I mean? And it just doesn't progress anything, you know, when we can progress so much. But I wanted to write it in a way where it starts out with this droning notion, and then it creates this positive, like, hopefulness, this sense of empathy. Originally I was thinking about calling it Apathy / Empathy, but then I was like, I don't want to do that. I kind of hate songs that have two / names. Like there's only like one song that like I like. I'm okay with, because like Coldplay did this on one of their albums and I fucking hated it. But what's his name? Oh my god. Oh, Schoolboy Q. He has a song on one of his albums where it's like a two-name song with / It's a great song. I forgot the name of it, but I was like, this is the only song where that's acceptable. But for this, I was like, let me just call it Apathy.
Yeah.
You know, and then by the end of the song you can feel something different.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is probably the most emotional song on the album, to me at least. I think it has the most feeling, but also like, and you know, we didn't really know this going into this song, like that it was gonna turn into this like hopeful note of what it became. Yeah. But like, and it is again, especially the empathy side of the song, like it's one of those bass lines that I felt like I could sit in for a while.
Yeah.
And just be zoned in and enjoy that. I also love that you saved it for the end because like we mentioned earlier, like there was a sense of relief that you got out of it. And I think it being the most emotional song, saving it for last, like it really kind of tied up, at least for me, that experience of recording the live parts that we did. So I think it really did capture kind of what you said you're going for, at least to me.
That's awesome. I'm glad you said, I mean, the fact that you said that it was kind of an emotional song. I mean, I feel like, wow, like that really like, I mean, that it executed for me. I mean, even I'm so glad Lizzie was able to play with us too, you know what I mean? Keyboard. So,
yeah. She was just what a trooper, but she was engineering for a lot of our recording process. We recorded everything, the trio first.
Yeah.
And she was like, I really want to play with you guys. And I'm so glad that we've got to get her in for a song, especially such an emotional.
Oh yeah.
Probably I would say important song to the album.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was glad that she was able to come in and we were able to kind of play as a band minus Anton. It would have been lovely with him there too, but you know, got to get the project done.
Time, yeah.
Yeah. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. I think it was that Monday. I remember listening to that song and I like teared up because like just how powerful it was, and with Anton's like melody creating it, because I remember like I think it was like that day or whatever after we recorded with Anton, he was just talking about, you know, his you know, the stuff that's going on as far as like Ukraine, Russia, and all that stuff, you know, and then just like I felt emotion in his playing. You know what I mean? Like he did some great, stuff throughout the project, but I felt real emotion in his playing for Apathy. And I am not the best like music creating person as far as from a notation sense. And it's kind of like, you know, one of the things me learning as far as like a musician, like being able to communicate with people that can read, write, you know, sight read, and then, you know, being able to meet in the middle, you know what I mean? But I found a sense of beauty with him being able to create that emotional melody that he did, especially at the beginning, because like you have this droning bass that kind of builds up. It's like, okay. And then you have Lizzie's piano, which kind of hits a chord there, you know, like hits you, you know. And then you have him, he does this. And I was like, I kind of played on guitar. It's like, oh, what is he playing there? And I was just like, wow, that was really powerful. That part right there. I was like, I don't know if people are going to catch onto it, but just that first like 20, 30 seconds, I was like, whoa. You know, and then also I just reflected back, like I was saying before, I was like, I thought this, like that part I thought of new wise, but the second half of the song that I didn't even know if I wanted to be a song or to incorporate, I thought for 6 years, I just didn't know what to do with it. Like I remember creating an EP and I incorporated it, but I was like, this is too much reverb. Like I like fucking deleted the song and took it off Bandcamp, but I still kept the idea of that part and me being able to connect it with that. And for you guys to really kind of embellish yourselves into, you know, playing that, I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Like that's great.
What do you think you learned to prepare for this from, I mean, the last music project you did was a rap album for yourself. Yeah. And then before that was Transitions 1. So in between the time that you've made Transitions 1 to this project, Transitions 2, what do you think you've learned that provided for the album experience that you had?
Man, I learned a lot, man. And I think, I learned that, like, there's a lot I've learned. I'm trying to create it into something to say here. I think a lot of it I learned was just as far as like the people that you choose like for certain projects and whatnot, like make sure they're the right person, not just like on a technical basis, but just like someone that you want to be a like an imprint on your music, you know what I mean? And I'm just super thankful for everyone that I chose and for them to lend me their time and everything, you know, and not taking that for granted. Just not taking people for granted, you know what I mean? Like that I wanted that with very little that I had to provide and give, I wanted that to be shown. Like, I don't take it for granted. Like, I know what I'm asking for is a lot, especially in a very expensive city. Like I wanted to make sure I showed appreciation, you know, and, you know, being able to be calm and be able to execute this thing, you know, and, breaking down everything. I remember I called you one night. I was like, freaking out about the drummer. Cause like, yeah. I remember you on, he had a gig in Santa Monica or something, like the rehearsal day. And he was like, oh, like, I remember he texted me. He was like, is it okay if I leave early? And I said, yeah, it's fine. It's like, I'm never going to turn down. I have to go make money. Is that like,
yeah,
like in anything. Right. Sure, yeah. 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 Like, even like not even talking about making an album. Like, I'm never going to be like, no, you have to paint my fence. You're like, like, please, like, do what you gotta do. And I was kind of freaking out of it. I was like, oh man, I hope it comes through, you know? But yeah, like everything just fell into place, you know? But yeah, again, I just wanted to make sure that I was appreciate people, you know, appreciate people, don't take them for granted. And then just, you know, Have fun, you know, and don't take yourself too seriously, you know, and being open to adapt and change things. You know, I think a lot of the times when we're leading something for the first time, a lot of musicians tend to just be a little too authoritative, you know. Oh no, you gotta play this way. It's like, you know, like, it's like, you kind of have to take a step back and see everything, you know? So like when I remember when Anton, I was rehearsing with him, and I was telling him like this thing that I was like, oh, let's see this. He's like, yeah, that seems boring. And I was like, well, and in my brain, I was like, it might be boring to my listeners. He might be right. So I was like, all right, well, let's figure this out. You know what I mean? And we ended up figuring it out, you know? So it's just like letting, like being able to take in like criticism and just like make adjustments, being open to adjust. Like that's such an important thing. And I learned a lot from him too. You know, I'm very grateful for him. As far as just him being able to meet me in the middle when he doesn't have to meet me in the middle, you know what I mean? Like, and I feel like, that's life. Like, people need to meet each other in the middle, regardless of like differences, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I learned that a lot. And then also I learned a lot of shortcuts in logic. I learned that I was learning logic for the first time, and I knew like conceptually, this is kind of the same thing. Like I've used three different like digital audio workstations. This can't be any crazier. But then the day before the rehearsal or the day before recording, I was like, I have to write this down, you know? So, like I have to write down a bunch of shortcuts. So like the day before recording, I was on YouTube for like maybe a couple of hours writing down shortcuts, writing down a procedure. What do I do after I record? Writing down the steps. Like I did all of that.
Yeah.
So just from like a technical basis, I learned logic. but yeah. So being able to execute an album in 3 days in like a professional manner, like, yeah, crazy stuff.
My last question is I feel like, I mean, I've got a bad memory, so my memories always fade, and I know that this is all pretty fresh, but like eventually it's going to kind of blur. And what we always really remember is the feelings that we had in those moments more than what actually happened.
Yeah.
So what do you think the feeling of this recording experience, writing this album, making this album, what do you think that feeling is going to be most prominently?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I think as far as like the feeling, this is going to sound very much like this answer is going to sound like I'm like a stuck up asshole, but I'm going to say it anyways, because like from a conceptual basis, I do think of this, but I know it doesn't compare to it with any realmscape, but I remember listening to the last song in Love Supreme, right? And one of the things I love about Love Supreme and John Coltrane, and specifically that album and that song, there is a sense where you feel like everyone's playing, but you feel that you feel that something is happening spiritually and you are listening to it before your very ears. I really believe this. Like, and I remember seeing a documentary on Coltrane and a lot of different musicians. They're kind of saying a similar thing. And I was listening to this and I was just, you feel that there's some type of divine intervention or spiritual thing that is happening. And I remember reading a biopic thing on Coltrane and some of his thoughts, I guess this guy pieced together and wrote. And he said that Coltrane felt himself getting closer to God as he was playing. And from a music theory standpoint, he's doing crazy stuff. He's playing in thirds. He's playing the fucking circle of fifths or whatever. But, for this notion, especially with apathy, I feel like God put us together. Just to say it very forthright, I feel like whoever I chose for this, I feel like God put us together and enabled us to have this experience of being able to enjoy music, enjoy ourselves.
Yeah.
And just create something cool. You know what I mean? And like that is what I'm always gonna remember. You know what I mean? Like, especially with people that I care about, like that is what I'm always gonna remember, you know. and some cool songs to listen to.
That's beautiful. Well, it's out now. It is Transitions 2. It is Jay Powell, the host of this show, The 440. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me host. Thanks for having me be a bass player on this project.
Dude, and thank you.
Yeah. You're a wonderful, wonderful man. So
thank you.
Thanks everybody for tuning up. Ooh, I got to say it. And we'll see you next time.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye.